Warren and 30 members of Congress are calling on the Biden administration to weigh in on behalf of Honduras in this case so that they do not bankrupt this country, and also to seek to remove these extreme investor rights from CAFTA and other free trade agreements, given that now that there is bipartisan opposition to this these very extreme rules that are exploited by corporations like Prospera.
Melinda St. Louis, want to thank you for being with us, Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, and Vanessa Cardenas, leader of the Community Council of Crawfish Rock, the area directly impacted by the Prospera Zede on the island of Roatan in Honduras. Go to democracynow.org to hear this interview in Spanish. Oh, and a happy belated birthday to John Randolph. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on KBOO. 2 hours of global bass with an emphasis on South Asia and the South Asian diaspora, and an even more special emphasis on the Punjabi diaspora. Hosted every Tuesday, 10 to midnight, by The Incredible Kid. This ain't world music, it's birth of a new world music.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Mayor Wheeler changes his stance on penalizing public drug use.
Governor Kotek has picked candidates for two important state offices.
And in international news, a number of Ukrainians, including children, are killed in a Russian missile attack.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 28th, 2023. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Governor Tina Kotek has named veteran educator and administrator Charlene Williams to be the next Department of Education director. Williams, who still needs to be confirmed by the state Senate, would be the first Black woman to serve in that position. Kotek called Williams the right person to oversee education for the state's more than 550,000 K-12 students. The governor said, quote, Dr. Williams is strategic, thoughtful, hardworking, and exactly the leader our state education system needs at this moment, end quote. Williams came to Oregon from North Carolina in 1999, becoming a math instructor, program coordinator, and curriculum developer at Portland Community College. From 2002 to 2009, she was director of education, then principal at Rosemary Anderson High School. She also served as principal at Roosevelt High School in North Portland and as senior director of school performance, which involved redesigning the teacher evaluation system in collaboration with the Portland Association of Teachers. More recently, Williams has been an administrator in Southwest Washington. She is currently deputy superintendent at Evergreen Public Schools and served until 2022 as an assistant superintendent in the Camas School District. Williams says she has dedicated her life to education. She adds, quote, I've seen firsthand how a positive student-teacher relationship can set a child on a successful path for the rest of their life. First and foremost, my goal will be to support students in every corner of the state so that they have the same chance to succeed. I recognize the significance of my appointment to this role, and I'm looking forward to building partnerships with students, educators, and families across Oregon that advance equity and student success. End quote.
Williams' appointment comes after legislative approval of a record-breaking $10.2 billion for the fund that will cover most K-12 schools over the next 2 years. Governor Kotek also backed a $145 million literacy package, marking the biggest investment in reading and writing since 2001. Oregon has a significant reading problem. Around 2 in 5 Oregon fourth graders and 1 in 5 eighth graders struggle to read and understand simple words, according to a recent expert assessment. Williams will oversee a budget of about $16 billion for 2023 through 2025 and around 620 staff members. Her salary will be $253,300 per year. Williams holds a doctorate in education and education leadership from Lewis and Clark College in Portland, a master's in education and mathematics from Wake Forest University in North Carolina, and a bachelor's of science from North Carolina State University. Kotek chose Williams after a national search. She will take over the department as interim director on Monday, July 10th. The Senate will consider her confirmation in September.
And in breaking news, another appointment by Governor Kotek today. She has also appointed a new Secretary of State. Former Secretary Shamia Fagan stepped down following ethical questions surrounding paid consulting work with the LaModa Cannabis Company. Kotek just named LaVon Griffin-Vallade to the position. Griffin-Vallade previously served as a government performance auditor for over 16 years, including 8 years in an elected capacity. Griffin-Vallade oversaw several divisions, including government performance auditing, elections, archives, and the Ombudsman's Office. The former Secretary of State stepped down on May 8th related to ethics concerns. She'd done consulting work with an office affiliated with cannabis company LaModa while her office was auditing the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission. Since retiring, Griffin-Vallade has earned a Master's of Fine Arts degree in creative writing from Portland State University. She's also published a 4-part series of mystery novels. Kotek said, quote, "I told Oregonians in May that the primary objective of our next Secretary of State was to restore confidence in the office. LaVon Griffin-Vallade has the professional background and ethical judgment to rise above politics and lead the important work of the agency forward. This role demands accountability and transparency, especially at this moment. I am eager to see her leadership restore faith in the Secretary of State's office," end quote.
Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler changed his mind about introducing a ban on drug use in public. He now acknowledges it would have violated state law. The planned policy would have criminalized the use of illicit drugs in public areas. Under current state law, possession of a small amount of illegal substances is treated as a civil violation and not a criminal offense. Wheeler had hoped his proposal would crack down on what he called a loophole in the state law. The mayor said, quote, "Use of illicit drugs in public spaces, especially dangerous and highly deadly substances like fentanyl, creates significant public safety and public health issues in Portland. I believe the city of Portland has an obligation to do what we can to protect our community now," end quote. An older state law prevents the city from creating its own ban. It explicitly states that a political subdivision in the state shall not, quote, "adopt any local law that makes using cannabis or controlled substances in public a crime," end quote. Wheeler recently told the press that his proposed ban would without a doubt have been challenged in court. He said he was still willing to take on that battle. A new state bill, HB 2645, makes it a criminal misdemeanor to possess 1 gram or more, or 5 or more pills, of any substance containing fentanyl, a synthetic opioid. Penalties include being sentenced up to a year in jail or a $6,250 fine. However, the bill still allows Portlanders to consume small amounts of fentanyl in public without criminal penalties. According to the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, just 2 milligrams of fentanyl can be lethal. Some experts feel approved Measure 110 made things worse. The measure gives people the option of receiving a fine or calling a hotline to be screened for substance abuse disorder if they're caught using drugs in public. Wheeler first announced the proposed drug use ban last week. There was pushback from people who work in substance abuse recovery programs. They said taking drug use out of sight could make it harder to connect people with treatment. The Portland City Council had been scheduled to vote on the local drug ban policy today.
The Supreme Court rules against independent legislature theory. A Senate panel reports massive intelligence failures preceding the January 6th Capitol insurrection, and high-speed internet may be coming to every American household by 2030. With those stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
It is baseless as a matter of history, text, and practice, and makes no sense as a matter of policy.
Wendy Weiser of the Brennan Center for Justice calls the independent legislature theory proposed by North Carolina Republicans an anti-democratic interpretation of the Constitution. The Supreme Court agreed on Tuesday, rejecting the claim state lawmakers have sweeping authority over congressional maps and federal elections. In a 6-3 ruling, the court upheld a decision by North Carolina's High Court, striking down a redistricting plan as severely partisan. A new Senate report finds intelligence agencies ignored a massive amount of warnings ahead of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Former Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sun says he witnessed a coordinated military-style attack.
These people came specifically with equipment. You're bringing climbing gear to a demonstration. You're bringing explosives.
The report says the FBI and Department of Homeland Security were aware of social media posts foreshadowing violence, as well as knowledge of far-right extremist groups planning to be in Washington, D.C. on the day the Electoral College vote was being counted. The Biden administration will distribute more than $40 billion nationwide to ensure reliable high-speed internet service for every American by 2030. Senator John Thune of South Dakota says tremendous oversight will be needed to ensure funds are not misspent.
More importantly, to ensure the funding is actually going to areas that are truly unserved.
At least 7% of the country lacks access to high-speed internet service, according to the FCC. House Democrats are calling for an independent investigation into Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, following reports of undisclosed luxury trips with a Republican megadonor. Representative Dan Goldman of New York calls the behavior un-American.
But sadly, it is not against the rules of the Supreme Court because there is no code of ethics that applies to the Supreme Court.
Democrats are asking Chief Justice John Roberts to establish an independent office to investigate. San Francisco could become the first city in the country to require all pharmacies to carry naloxone, a drug that reverses opioid overdoses. San Francisco Supervisor Matt Dorsey says pharmacies without the drug would endure fines.
My sense is that the community has had enough of excuses, and they want answers about what we're doing.
And ongoing wildfires across Canada are raising air quality concerns throughout the Great Lakes region and in parts of the central and eastern United States. Air quality has been categorized unhealthy in Chicago. Officials are urging young people, older adults, and residents with health issues to stay indoors. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Large numbers of passengers are likely to be stranded or delayed this weekend. Neither federal officials nor the airlines themselves seem ready to accept the blame. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, falls under the jurisdiction of Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. He has already been complaining about the airlines for more than a year. Buttigieg has claimed they failed to live up to reasonable standards of customer service and suggested they are scheduling more flights than they can handle. More recently, he said flights could be disrupted because some planes lack updated equipment aimed at preventing interference from transmissions by wireless companies. Wireless carriers will be free to boost the power of some of their 5G signals on July 1st. Those signals resemble the frequencies used by radio altimeters, which measure the height of a plane above the ground. Newer altimeters are protected from interference, but planes must be retrofitted with the right equipment in order to be allowed to land when visibility is poor, such as during bad weather. The airlines are pointing fingers elsewhere. United Airlines CEO Scott Kirby blamed a shortage of federal air traffic controllers for major disruptions last week at its Newark hub. The FAA has admitted that it is understaffed at key facilities. It is training about 3,000 new air traffic controllers, but most of them won't be ready anytime soon. Last week, the Transportation Department's Inspector General said the FAA has made only, quote-unquote, limited efforts to adequately staff critical air traffic control centers and that it lacks a plan to tackle the problem. As of mid-morning today, about 2,000 U.S. flights had been delayed and more than 700 canceled. The worst disruptions were along the East Coast, which has been hit by massive thunderstorms. Travel has picked up steadily each year since it hit rock bottom during the pandemic. An average of 2.6 million people a day fly in the United States, on par with pre-pandemic numbers. The number of air travelers is expected to set a pandemic-era record over the holiday weekend. Tomorrow should be the busiest day, with more than 52,500 total flights.
Speaking of things in the air, summertime smoke from Canadian wildfires is smothering the Midwest while extreme heat has spread from Texas to Florida. Over 500 wildfires, around half of them out of control, are burning in Canada, sending smoke south and making the air unhealthy from west of Chicago to east of Pittsburgh. Wildfire season in Canada usually doesn't begin until early July, but this year it started around the middle of May. Meanwhile, along the southeast edge of the country, a heat dome that began last week in West Texas has spread its way to the Atlantic coast from Kansas City to the Florida Keys. Temperatures are 20 degrees above normal. Temperatures 10 degrees above normal are expected in Northern California, Idaho, and Eastern Washington. And though temperatures are not expected to be above average in the southwest, dry conditions, low humidity, and gusty winds will increase fire danger across much of Arizona, New Mexico, and West Texas this week.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO's News in Depth with a special episode of Making Contact. At 7, it's PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Then at 8, Ditch Digger. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a few late showers. The low will be 78. Tomorrow's weather will have sunshine and mixed clouds with a high around 80 degrees. Today in history, in 1914, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, heir to the Austro-Hungarian throne, was assassinated in Bosnia. That event precipitated World War I. The quote of the day is from producer Mel Brooks, born this day in 1926. Brooks said, "If you're quiet, you're not living. You gotta be noisy and colorful and lively."
To Ukraine now, where 8 people were killed in a missile attack yesterday, including 3 children. At least 56 others were injured. Russian missiles hit the center of Kramatorsk in eastern Ukraine. A restaurant and shopping center were hit in the strike on the city. It's under Ukrainian control now, but remains close to Russian-occupied parts of the country. The attack took place around 19:30 local time. Social media and drone footage from the scene showed damage to multiple buildings, some of which were reduced to rubble. A rescue operation is currently underway in the city center, with security agencies providing emergency services at the scene and evacuating victims. Local authorities say the area had a high concentration of civilians when the missiles struck. Russian forces also appeared to target a nearby village, according to the Kramatorsk City Council. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Russia deserves, quote, only defeat and a tribunal, and just and lawful courts against all Russian murderers and terrorists, end quote. The White House condemned Russia for its brutal strikes. Kramatorsk has often been targeted by missiles since the start of the war in February 2022. The city of 150,000 people is one of the largest still under Ukrainian control. It lies about 18 miles from the front. In April of last year, more than 60 people died there following a missile strike on the city's railway station. Zelensky said Ukraine's counteroffensive is still advancing on all fronts.
The 4th annual Immigration Summit concludes today in Los Angeles. Many challenges remain unresolved. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
The 4th Annual Immigration Summit wraps up today at the California Endowment in downtown Los Angeles. The summit has brought together almost 300 people from immigrant-serving nonprofits, government, research institutions, and philanthropy. Rosie Arroyo with the California Community Foundation says the new State of Immigrants in L.A. report finds that L.A. County is home to 3.5 million immigrants, who make up 34% of the population. She adds, 20% of immigrants are either undocumented or live with someone who is.
Through the pandemic, they were being the frontline workers. But we also know that despite having contributed over $10.7 billion in state and local taxes in 2019, they don't get their fair share of resources and support.
The report also finds that more than a third of undocumented individuals lack health insurance, and 60% of immigrant renters have to spend 30% or more of their income on housing. Los Angeles County has made large investments in programs that serve immigrants, but the report calls for more funding for college readiness, mental health, affordable housing, business development, and new arrival assistance. Manuel Pastor, director of the USC Equity Research Institute, says breaking down the language barrier is another big priority.
We need to create more language access to city and county services. At the same time, we need to increase language capacity in English, and that means creating much more opportunities for ESL classes.
The report also recommends more resources to address the digital divide, noting that 50% of undocumented individuals in LA County lack high-speed internet or a computer at home. The Biden administration just announced $1.8 billion to build out broadband infrastructure in California, on top of the $6 billion allocated by the state. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Tribalone monitoring stations near Canada are working to let people in neighboring communities know when nearby air quality worsens. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Wisconsin and Michigan reported some of the worst air quality readings in the world Tuesday due to wildfire smoke from Canada. WXPR's Katie Thorson spoke with one of the tribally owned air monitoring stations in the northern Wisconsin region.
Part of Madeline Cummings' job as the Forest County Potawatomi Air Quality Program Manager is to make sure people know when the air quality worsens. She issues orders to raise a couple flags throughout the reservation indicating the air quality. The color matches the National Air Quality Index, which ranges from green for good to mauve or maroon for hazardous. Cummings has done this work for nearly 20 years, but it wasn't until recently that she's seen some of the worst air quality.
Just in the last 3 years, that has just jumped up. And of course, this year, it's I don't know how many I've issued. And 2 years ago, when there were the Canadian and northern Minnesota fires, you know, that's the first time since I've been here and since we've been monitoring that we went, you know, purple, even went mauve, which is the highest level.
Forest County Potawatomi is one of seven tribal reservations in the country to hold the same air quality designation as national parks and wilderness areas. The station monitors for particulate matter, ozone pollution, and sulfur dioxide in the air, as well as a visibility monitor.
That is the data that's used then for the AirNow site, which gives you what the current air quality is, and they also use modeling then to do forecasting.
Cummings urges people to take air quality reports seriously. Breathing in smoke particles and gas can lead to respiratory and cardiovascular issues. I'm Katie Thorson.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has released an updated population estimate for Cook Inlet beluga whales in Alaska. In 2018, the best estimate stood at 279. Now it's 331. KNBA's Hannah Bissett has more.
The population estimate for Cook Inlet beluga whales has been delayed since 2018 due to challenges such as the pandemic and weather restrictions. It's finally been conducted this year, providing important information about the current status of this endangered species. The population estimate pool has been raised by around 100 whales. According to NOAA biologist Paul Wade, the new development shows that the population is finally stable.
However, when we look back over the 10-year window, because 10 years gives us enough data points to make some sort of conclusive statement, it looks like it actually was declining and then increased, and then overall that evens out to being stable.
According to the latest population survey conducted by NOAA, the new estimate indicates an improved count. This change could be impacted by several factors, including, but not limited to, points of pollution and decreased noise pollution. The actual cause of the median increase is still being studied. As to get an accurate idea, you would need multiple years to showcase the incline. Reagan Davey is a chemist dedicated to advancing research and resources to enhance our understanding of Cook Inlet beluga whales. Davey emphasizes that a decade ago, a list of contaminants of the Cook Inlet was identified. There are hundreds of mixing zones that are approved for the Cook Inlet. However, the tests taken to showcase the pollution in the mixing zones have yet to yield definitive results regarding every impurity found in the area.
What I think would be great is if they did have to test for every contaminant, because then you could directly relate it to a source, but that's not how it goes. So, and they do issue and report what is over the limit. They don't have to test for everything.
The incline of the median still needs to be thoroughly dissected to get a complete picture of how the belugas are truly doing. I'm Hannah Bissett.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Dengue fever and Zika have long been problems for our southern neighbors. Now these infections are being found in some western states. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In Florida, Texas, and other parts of the South, a flower pot or a tire sitting in a yard could house unwelcome guests, mosquito eggs of the species Aedes aegypti. It's the type of mosquito that transmits dengue, Zika, and yellow fever. Roxanne Connolly of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is an expert in mosquito-borne diseases.
These eggs are drought-resistant, and they can survive up to several months. Once those eggs are covered with water, whether it's from rainfall or a sprinkler, the eggs will hatch into larvae.
Aedes aegypti are sensitive to cold temperatures, as eggs and adults, so they cannot survive the winter in much of the country. But Connolly says that as the climate warms, these mosquitoes may establish populations farther north, for example, in Nevada, Utah, and Nebraska.
In all three of those places, the mosquito has been detected for a few years in a row, so it seems that there are some places outside of where you would expect it where it is becoming established.
Mosquitoes can only spread Zika or dengue fever after biting an infected person, so the species' expanding range will not necessarily lead to outbreaks. But Connolly says the public should be aware of the growing risks. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
It is Wednesday, and that means a visit from KBOO Radio news poet Dan Raphael. Tonight, Dan considers the duh in democracy.
We have all kinds of holidays, but none to celebrate democracy, which makes sense since there's not much to celebrate. Yes, the Supreme Court ruled yesterday that state legislatures couldn't make rules and gerrymanders for federal elections. But recently, Texas passed a law that local governments, particularly Democrat-controlled cities, couldn't pass laws like some concerning environmental safeguards or LGBTQ rights that went beyond state limits. In D.C., Republicans in Congress threatened to shut down everything unless the Democrats, with a Senate majority, didn't hold back on changes they wanted to make. In Oregon, Republican state senators simply refused to show up for work rather than accept majority rule. And next year, here in Portland, we'll be paying a city government of 13 instead of 5 to continue helping wealthy developers get wealthier while making life even harder for the rest of us. Be careful what and who you vote for, but vote every chance you get. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 28th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, tips, compliments, etc. at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael. The producer is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Mike Moen, Suzanne Potter, Catherine Carley, and of course, His Eminence, Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. I've lived all over the country, and trust me when I tell you, there is nothing like KBOO anywhere else in the country. It is truly unique and worth supporting. If you'd like to become a member and support this programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give, or you can do it by text. Everybody does everything by text these days. KBOO. 244321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth, and have a great night. We'll be right back.
Making contact.
On today's Making Contact, we commemorate the 75th anniversary of the Nakba, when more than 700,000 Palestinians were violently displaced from their homes. Nakba means catastrophe in Arabic. It's generally understood as the events that started in late 1947, but the ongoing Nakba also refers to the current displacement and oppression of Palestinians that continues today. In the first half of our show, we have a story from Gaza. Over 2 million Palestinians live there, and they are essentially trapped. A blockade imposed by Israel since 2007 places harsh restrictions on the movements of people and goods by land, air, and sea. Conditions are so bad that some Palestinians are setting off in boats in the hopes of reaching Europe. Gaza-based reporter Rami Amagari brings us this story.
Zayd Allah is 28 years old. I spoke to him inside his home in the northern Gaza town of Beit Lahia. He looks cheerful despite the heaviness of the story, he tells me. Zayd graduated 6 years ago from university, yet he ended up a local farmer, providing for his 3 children and wife. In the past 3 years, he has attempted to migrate 3 times from Gaza to Europe in the hopes of seeking a better living. But the crossing is dangerous, and the Israeli Navy patrols the 25-mile Gaza coast and restricts access to the sea. Zayd first tried crossing through Turkish waters to Greece with the help of smugglers in 2018. He was hoping